Thank you very much. Merci beaucoup. Je suis très contente d'être ici, bien sûr. Je suis très heureuse d'avoir l'opportunité de faire un séminaire dans cette prestigieuse institution. Malheureusement, mon français ne suffit pas pour faire la conférence en français. Je vais changer vers l'anglais. I will switch to English. So really, let me say again, it's a great pleasure for me to be here, and I thank all of you, and in particular Bernard, for the invitation. Subject of my talk is this very old problem introduced by Fermi, Pasta, and Ulam, and everything I will tell you is done in collaboration with a young colleague in Padua, Antonio Ponno, plus somebody else I will tell you, by the way. And all the ideas are, first of all, the original paper by Fermi, Pasta, and Ulam, done in 54 in Los Alamos lab. Then the second idea is many years later, in 82, 83, the idea that in the problem, as Bernard told a few minutes ago, probably there are two very well separated time scales. And the second idea, independent, almost in the same time, is the presence of an underlying integrable, and so in a sense trivial, dynamics. And this was introduced by Ferguson, Flaschka, and McLaughlin. On all of this, I will show you, of course, some new results, but they will be mainly numerical. Together with results, a few mathematical results, not mine, some conjectures, and the open problems on which we are trying to work at the moment. So, Fermi, Pasta, Ulam. It is the last paper by Fermi, who died in November 54. So the paper appeared after his death. It's an important paper for several reasons. It is the first known paper in what is called nowadays molecular dynamics or molecular experiments on dynamical systems, numerical simulation of dynamical systems. And a second reason that it started, or at least it was the strong motivation to start a modern branch of the theory of nonlinear oscillations. Dabusky and Kraskal in 65 introduced, rediscovered in a sense, the KdV equation with solitons and so on, just with the motivation to understand what Fermi, Pasta, and Ulam did. And the reason I'm interested in is that the paper raised some elementary double quotation marks questions, that is fundamental questions in statistical mechanics or ergodic theory, if you wish, in the dynamical foundations of statistical mechanics, more or less the subject of the previous talk by Bernard, which today, over 60 years later, are not yet completely understood. Well, the authors, Fermi's Fermi, doesn't need any presentation. John Pasta was really one of the first computer scientists ever existed. And a very interesting person is Stanislaw Ulam, a Polish mathematician, very expert of diffusion equations, and able to make diffusion computations in the very uncommon situation in which an atomic bomb is exploding. A strange physical situation. You have to understand the propagation of fronts. He's also known as the inventor of what nowadays is called Monte Carlo method in physics, just extracting randomly something and computing integrals or something else. But he was a multiform mathematician, also very expert in number theory, prime numbers. If you just look for Ulam spiral for prime numbers in internet, you will find something interesting. The model they considered is a very simple model. Let me go the other way because, no, it is the same. The most simple model of a solid you can imagine, just a certain number of particles, 32, in some cases 64 for them, for fixed ends, for example, and just Hamiltonian with a kinetic part and the potential, which depends on the distance between particles. Qi is just the displacement from equilibrium. And the classical Fermi-Pasta-Ulam potential is just a series development of the bottom of a potential well, just the quadratic harmonic part, a cubic and a quartic term. What is very important is that the nonlinearity in the problem is determined not only by the constants, of course, alpha and beta, but also on the energy. For small energy or energy per particle epsilon, you see the cubic nonlinearity is as small as alpha square root of epsilon, and the quartic nonlinearity as small as beta times epsilon.
What's the boundary condition? Boundary.
Yeah.
Boundary conditions.
Most experiments I will tell you are for fixed boundary conditions, but you can repeat with the periodic boundary conditions, of course, taking care of the conservation of total momentum. It's not critical. When comparing with the Korteweg-de Vries equation, it's more natural to consider the periodic case, but it's not critical, I mean. If you take the Fourier analysis, is simpler if you take fixed boundary conditions, and then you make the usual Fourier analysis with sine waves for the Qs, for the Ps, and you write a Hamiltonian which in normal coordinates has the linear part, exactly quadratic part, in fact, plus an interaction which is in general considered small and a perturbation of the linear model, but you will see later it is not a deep way. It's very important for later use the dispersion relations. The frequencies follow exactly the profile of the sine. This means that we have a beautiful resonance here. Omega k is k times omega 1 up to cubic terms. The purpose of the authors was not even to know if the system, if you prepare it out of equilibrium, goes to equilibrium. It was considered obvious. They want to know the time scale. And they made the most elementary thermalization test you can imagine with your simple computer. You just consider the time average of the energies of the single normal modes, which are coupled by the nonlinear terms, and you identify equilibrium by the fact that all of them converge to their phase average, which is almost exactly epsilon, at least it is for small nonlinearity. And the typical work done in the overwhelming majority of papers on Fermi-Pasta-Ulam is that you give initially energy to a few modes, the first, the second, a few in general, typically of low frequency, and you expect that to see the energy flow to all modes till equipartition, and you question about the times. A question which was not important at the very beginning, but we recognized more recently, it is extremely important, is to distinguish between the limits. The thermodynamic limit means you fix your energy, maybe small, but you fix it. You take the limit n to infinity, and maybe later on you decrease the energy or the temperature. It is conceptually different, but there is a lot of confusion in the literature, from the limit at fixed n, the limit epsilon going to zero, and maybe then n going to infinity. Of course, everybody knows that limits in general do not commute in analysis. This is a case in which the lack of commutation you will see is deep. The problem is the same problem of all statistical mechanics. You compress in a piston the atomic gases, you expect an immediate transfer of energy to the center of mass of the molecules, and then with some time scale, you have to discover the passage of energy in the internal fast vibrating decrease of freedom. It's a problem which is absolutely non-trivial. Boltzmann made a very interesting work in 95, and then Jeans, and then Landau and Teller, because the specific heat of the gas depends on the number of degrees of freedom which are involved. It is the same problem as Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. For example, if I clap my hands, then we have low frequencies in a tenth of second, you compress and dilatate. For high frequency in 10 minus 4 seconds, so maybe the specific heat is different from acute sound waves with respect to bass sound waves. And this is the problem studied precisely by Landau and Teller in 36. So it's a non-trivial problem, really non-trivial. Well, this is Maniac 1. It's hard to understand the speed, but it seems it was able to make 10 power 4 operations, multiplications per second. Now your mobile, the mobile phone you have in your pocket is 10 power 5 faster than such computer. And modern works in molecular dynamics very easily involve many CPUs, and 10 power 7, 10 power 8, perhaps nowadays even 10 power 9 years of Maniac 1. But Maniac 1, is, if you look for Maniac 1 in the literature, you will find not Fermi-Pasta-Ulam problem, but the fact that it was the first computer program to play chess. Simplified chess, a 6x6 board without bishops. It seems it was a bad player, unfortunately. You see a human plays and the other one programs the computer. I don't know who these guys are. Well, this is a remake, an easy remake of the original Fermi-Pasta-Ulam experiment, 32 particles. You start with the whole energy on the first mode, and after some time, here is a log scale, observe, 10 power 6, 10 power 7. It seems the energies of different modes reach a limit, which is absolutely different from equipartition. The final energy of mode is absolutely different from equipartition. Energy is rather small. This is the original figure by Fermi-Pasta and Ulam, you see. Much smaller times, but clear enough. Moreover, if you look not at the average energies, but the instant energies, you find recurrences, not exact recurrences. You have a slow decrease here, but you find recurrences, an idea of quasi-periodicity. It's not what you expect for a system who is thermalizing. And this is the original figure in the paper by Fermi-Pasta and Ulam. And authors get surprised. The results of our computation were from the beginning surprising to us. Instead of a gradual increase of all the higher modes, the energy is exchanged essentially among only a certain few. It's therefore very hard to observe the rate of thermalization or mixing in our problem, and this was the initial purpose of the calculation. And 10 years later, In the introduction Ulam made to the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam paper in the Fermi Collected Papers, who are in 65, Ulam insists on the surprise. The results of computation were interesting and quite surprising Fermi. He expressed to me the opinion that they really constituted a little discovery. A little discovery pronounced by Fermi is something. Is something. In the meanwhile, a few years before, Tuck and Menthel made longer computation. This is exactly what I did show you before. It is this one. Here you observe the peak number 0, number 1, and number 2, the red one. And this is number 0, 1, 2. It goes down, but then up again, down and up again, with a strong impression of a quasi-periodicity. In fact, the first attempts to understand were via integrability, quasi-periodicity, KEM theory, and also, as I told you in 65, you see a few years later, through the wave equation, and all the modern theory of nonlinear wave equations, solitons, at least it started by the work by Zabuski and Kraskal as a possible interpretation of such results. Much later, You have the inverse scattering, the Hamiltonian structure, modified KdV, non-linear Schrödinger, and machinery, which of course went on by alone. It's strange, but only in 68, Chirikov made experiments at larger energy. This is an example of a result at larger energies, and here you observe exactly what you expect. You excite mode number one, but rather soon, energy is exchanged among all modes, and you have a beautiful equipartition in time. Again, the paradigm is KAM theory, and there is a threshold. The search for a threshold in energy such that below the threshold you have the strange behavior observed by Fermi, Pasti, and Dulam, and above you have ordinary normal statistical mechanics. Is it so? Not exactly. In 82 you have the first turning point, the so-called metastability scenario. A couple of papers of several Italian authors, including Giorgio Parisi. And the idea is that for small epsilon, the state observed by Fermi, Pasti, and Dulam is not perpetual. The explanation is not KAM, which is an infinite time theorem. Rather, two well-separated scales enter the problem. The short time is what Fermi observed. Energy is spread irregularly among a group, a packet of modes, characterized by a tail which is exponentially decaying in the number of modes. But this state is not perpetual, it's only apparently stationary. On a much longer times, equilibrium is reached. This is the new picture. And you recognize the new cultural background. In the meanwhile, a few years before, there was the great attention in the realm among people working statistical mechanics on spin glasses, and this is why Parisi is made in evidence there, because he is the father of the theory of spin glasses. But also on the side of dynamical systems, there was Nekrashov theorem with the idea that possibly long time processes do exist in dynamical systems. This is an example, a way to show the presence of two time scales. Here you have the profile, the black curve is the initial profile. Here you have the wave number k normalized to n. Initially, all energy is given to equal to 10% of modes, this black curve. After a time 10 power 3, basically the elastic constant is 1, so 10 power 3 means that typically a single particle oscillated 10 power 3 times. 10 power 4, 10 power 6, 5, you see, you have a profile, this is a semi-log scale, this is an exponential, the line is an exponential, but later on you see the tail grows and grows and grows and grows, and the system on a much larger time scale arrives to equilibrium. So in a short time you have the formation of the Fermi-Pasti-Ulam state, in a much longer time the tail raises and you arrive to a flat situation. In 82, you have the second idea, it is simultaneous, of course. There is a beautiful paper, almost ignored in the literature. It's very hard to find references to such a paper, which is beautiful instead in the literature. By the way, there is Flaschke inside. They claimed that Fermi-Pasti must understood as an integrable system, which, however, is not the linear system. It is the so-called TODA model. Integrable, I don't know if it is familiar, is mechanically the most simple thing you can have in your mind. There are a lot of conserved quantities, n degrees of freedom, n conserved quantities, n symmetries in the system. And you can always pass to action angle variables. Change variables basically means turning your head, at least if n is small. If n is large, it can be something very different, but maybe at the end we shall say something. But modulo the fact that you turn your head, the system appears as an almost uncoupled system. N quantities stay constant in time, the actions, and the angles run on the torus with a constant speed. Nothing happens, but the fact that angles in general, unless you have special relations of frequencies, fill densely a torus. And the idea in this paper is that the first time scale is nothing but randomization of phases on a torus, so a very, very partial equilibrium, I mean, while actions stay constant. Toda in 1977 introduced a model which revealed to be very important. He introduced it precisely because he was able, in that model, to obtain particular solutions for the vibration in the lattice. It is a model exactly as Fermi-Pasta-Ulam, but with a special potential, which starts as Fermi-Pasta-Ulam, but it is precisely the series of the exponential if you subtract the constant, of course, and the linear part. This is the shape. Only in 1975 it was proven independently in a few months of time of distance. The papers appear one after the other in the same journal. The integrability was proven. The model contains two free constants, so you can use them to fit your Fermi-Pasta-Ulam model. You can change this number to be exactly 1/2, and this to be alpha divided by 3. So you can make it tangent to Fermi-Pasta-Ulam till cubic, while the linear one is tangent only till the quadratic part. And so you get your TODA system is starts with the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam, and then beta is what it is, gamma is what it is. Non-integrability here doesn't mean it is linear, it's different from non-linearity. It means that beta is not beta TODA, gamma is not gamma TODA. And the naive consideration is obviously, it is naive because then you have to discuss what happens with large n, and it will be not only true, but even more true. The distance between linear and TODA, or between linear and FPU, is larger than between FPU and TODA. It's just common sense, nothing more at the moment. Let us make a comparison. This is FPU, the previous figure. This is TODA, only the first time scale, and then nothing happens. If you prune the first part, you compare, you see they are exactly identical. And this was understood in 82 by Ferguson, Flaschka, and McLaughlin. Another example, a different initial excitation. Initially, all the energy was given to a packet of mode at the middle of the model. This is what happens in Fermi-Pasta-Ulam and in TODA. If you increase time in Fermi-Pasta-Ulam, you have the same phenomenon as previously. You see. Here you arrive at equipartition on a much longer time scale, and here the model, the system remains in this situation. And the comparison is clearly very, very clear. So you have a phase averaging, which produces both in TODA and in Fermi-Pasta-Ulam exactly the same distribution of energy among normal modes. In TODA it is forever, in Fermi-Pasta-Ulam is up to a certain time scale. For larger time, you produce some drift of the actions, perhaps to full statistical equilibrium. As a matter of fact, the presence of TODA is very important not only for the first time scale in the system, but also for the long time scale. There are several questions here. The first of all, is it possible to define in the thermodynamic limit some scale? Is there some convenient definition of time for equilibrium, depending on the number of degrees of freedom and the energy, which converge to something in the correct limit? And then, if it does, which is the dependence on the energy and on the temperature, if you allow the confusion? A power law, exponential, there is a debate in the literature, and several papers obtain apparently contradictory results. It's not very clear. And then, of course, you want to know if it is model dependent, and in particular, if it is dimension dependent. Which definition? I will not produce an exact definition because it takes time, but any definition you take more or less is the same. Let me say that in some sense, just imagine your own definition. You consider t to be the time you need for the growth of the tail. You forget the first part, the time of growth of the tail. Let me be not precise. If somebody is interested, we discuss the details of the definition later, but it is not critical. The only point is, which is perhaps relevant, is that from the black to the red curve, what changes is in the low frequency modes that you don't see. Perhaps you are missing the hydrodynamic part in the system, but I haven't time to enter this point. Maybe if you look for t as a function of epsilon for a fixed n, you have curves, strange curves. A careful observation shows that they are exponentials. These are exponential. But if you increase n and you look for the correct thermodynamic limit, at the same, you see, for the same energy, you go down in the limit, you make the limit, in a way which is obviously not uniform in epsilon, all points accumulate to a line. It means that in the wrong limit, you have exponentials. In the correct limit, you have the power law, so a crossover from exponential to power, and it turns out that you have such a strange, sorry, the competition of two limits, you have such a strange power that I would be happy, I promised a bottle of wine, if somebody is able to deduce this exponent. It's rather precise numerically, we are not able to do. And well, what happens if you change something in the model? This is what was done for beta equal to 2. The beta toda with alpha 1 is 2/3. You can change beta. This is the final curve, the last one, the infinite, n equal to infinity. You change beta and essentially nothing changes. The power law, the line, you obtain parallel lines, all of them have the same strange power 9 over 4. Only if you make the system more tangent to toda, taking beta exactly equal to beta t and gamma different, of course, two different values of gamma, the slope changes. And you can do again, even more tangent to toda, the slope changes. So it seems Fermi-Pasta-Ulam models are divided into universality classes according to the tangency to toda. You can investigate the dependence on beta, and this also turns out in a very precise law, which is simpler to understand. Clearly, the time have a peak exactly for beta toda, and if you are exactly on beta toda, you don't obtain infinity because there is gamma, which is not identical to gamma toda, of course, but the peak is evident, and all these curves on the left, on the right, at two different energies, they are all power laws squared. The dependence of the t on beta is very clear. Beta minus beta toda, power minus 2. I'm not able to explain, but I understand how it should be explained simply by, if one is able to make uniformly n, we are not, some perturbation step, telling that the system is integrable also not only beta minus beta t, but also beta minus beta t squared. This I'm not able to do, but I understand how in principle it is possible to prove such a law. So the overall picture is that this is for our energies, but in principle for any function of action and variables, you have a first time scale just rearranging the phases, okay, for any function, and the second time scale, which if the function you observe as the energy of moles produces equipartition, otherwise it produces what it does, is averaging also on actions. And the overall law in the second scale seems to be that one. Beta minus beta t power minus 2, sorry, there is a minus. No, the speed is power 2, yeah, and epsilon power plus 9 over 4. Of course, the time is the opposite, the inverse. Is it possible to observe directly the diffusion of the action? It's extremely difficult because of course, normal modes, in a certain sense, once you understand that the system is similar to TODA, why insist on normal modes? They are easy to compute, of course. But is it possible to abandon normal modes and to observe directly the actions? Yes or not? They are implicitly defined, although there is an algorithm and we are starting now to compute them, but it is extremely difficult. Moreover, for example, the goal of Fermi, Past, and Dulam was to define a time scale. Well, a time scale is given if you have if you observe the decay of a correlation of intelligent functions, in particular of the actions. It's painful because to produce averages you need many trajectories. But if you are able to consider functions which do not like the action themselves or any function of the actions, something which does not contain the angles inside, you filter out the fast time scale, you filter out the evolution of the angles, and you observe, but you observe from the very beginning, this slow diffusion of actions, which on long time scales produces possibly equilibrium. It's important to filter out the angles and so consider either the actions or any function of the actions. And very well-known functions of the angles do exist, precisely the constants of motion discovered by Flaschka and by Henon when they proved that the system is integrable. They are easily computed. There is a very easy algorithm. And as a matter of fact, if you compute several of them with fixed ends, the old ones are zero, so here we have only the even one. You see that by increasing the number, the label of the constant, and a natural label of the constant, they accumulate on a line here, but it is a semi-log, so on an exponential. An exponential means that here a time scale is well defined. You have an exponential decay of correlations. This is exactly the time Fermi, Past, Ulam were looking for. They were searching for the time of equilibrium. It was much more difficult, certainly impossible, with their Maniac 1 computer. It is a time scale, and as a fact, you find that the behavior, if n is sufficiently large, is independent of n. So this is such a diffusion, empirically, numerically, is found to be good in the thermodynamic limit, given epsilon n going to infinity, and it follows a law which is similar to the previous one, but not identical. This is something we are not able to understand. We have some conjectures, but really we are not able to understand. The previous law was this one, the law of the raising of the tail. I did not give you the precise definition, but just imagine a time scale which tells you how the tail is raising. The tail of normal modes. And this is the speed of diffusion of actions in the phase space. They are different. They are both rather accurate. It seems they represent a little different phenomena. This is possible. My personal conjecture, but it is not a conjecture supported by something else. It's just a feeling, an intuition. I haven't better ideas. Is that if you observe the rays of the tail, you are missing hydrodynamics. Let me make an example. You're taking a bath in your pool. you move the water. The water takes, I don't know, 1 minute to arrive at rest. Only after 1 minute, the water is at equilibrium. But in a millisecond, if you put a thermometer inside, a fast thermometer, there is no need at all that all modes go to equilibrium if you want to define a temperature. The temperature is defined even if a fraction of the energy is on long waves. If it is so, then what is interesting is the tail, the fast frequencies. The low ones, representing the hydrodynamics of the model, are not so relevant if you speak of temperature and statistical equilibrium in your system. So it's not, I don't claim this is a very intuitive analogy with no support at all, but if it is so, then it is more interesting to observe the raising of the tail, which doesn't consider hydrodynamics, than the complete equilibrium, which could be only on longer time if also hydrodynamics is introduced in the problem. But this is nothing but a feeling. This is an example of the independence of the profile I told you on n. So this is a small n, you see, but you increase, you increase, you increase. It is harder to go to larger numbers because it's very, very expensive. Numerically, it is very expensive. But you see, this phenomenon is reasonably stable in n. Also, the dependence on beta is rather good. If you look at the slopes for different betas, this is the figure, but if you rescale the time axis according to beta minus beta t squared, you see that curves almost exactly collapse on a single one, and the same happens for the other power law. Yeah, it is the other one. You see, this is the before rescaling, this after rescaling, but the correct exponent is 5 over 2 and not 9 over 4. Mathematics. Mathematics here is rather poor. It's difficult, and there is almost nothing, really almost anything, in the case which is of our interest to us of large n. I did not make a precise analysis of papers because Bernard told me not to enter too much in math. But there are really not so many papers. First one, which is interesting, 71, continued by Bob Rink in 2006, and Enrici and Kappeler also. There are several papers exploiting the relation between either Fermi-Pasta-Ulam or TODA to the linear system, exploiting the continuity for fixed n and epsilon going to zero, the other limit, between the linear mode and any nonlinear one, including recent papers, you see. All these papers work in a scaling regime which is completely out of statistical mechanics. All the results they are able to obtain are when epsilon is as small as n minus 4. So really nothing to do with the statistical mechanics. Following these papers, it's really there is no hope to understand either Fermi-Pasta-Ulam or TODA as a perturbation of linear. Here you look, I put here, it is not square root of epsilon. The distance is square, seems to be square root of epsilon times n power 4. So in the limit of large n, this triangle becomes extremely large. And it is really a problem because the obstruction is the presence of the small divisors in the acoustic resonance. All these papers are based on the The possibility of making the so-called Birkhoff series with two steps in such a way that you normalize the nonlinear system using as the starting point the linear one. It turns out that you have one resonance, another resonance, omega k plus omega l, if the number are small, minus omega k plus l is very, very small, as n minus 3. If sufficiently many energy is stored inside these three modes, then you obtain terms as large as numerator e, denominator n minus 3, e power n power 3, epsilon power n power 4. This is the point. And in the last paper I did show you, 216, there is they are able to prove in certain assumptions, there are some technicalities, and if and only if, that is, if you are out of these regimes, this regime, continuity is lacking. Actions do not reduce to normal modes. The attempt we made in 65, it's not written here, but together with Roberto Livi, I'm sorry I forgot to insert his name, many of you know him, is to exploit, but in a heuristic way, some kind of continuity, very non-trivial, between Todd and FPU with the Korteweg-de Vries equation. It turns out that you can rearrange what Zabuski and Kraskal did in 65, making a certain tricky limit of the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam model when n goes to infinity, so as to recover the Korteweg-de Vries equation, the equation which is which enters the tsunami phenomena. Okay, and what you get if you work carefully is that for large n with some non-trivial scalings, this crucial coefficient in the equation is, you see, 1 divided our famous n power 4 epsilon power 1/4. What does it mean? That the limit of mathematicians, the limit if you haven't a too big computer and the possibility to enlarge n, is the limit of large dispersion, epsilon going to zero at fixed n. The thermodynamic limit is the limit of low dispersion, an absolutely different limit, a singular limit. The coefficient of the highest order term, 3x with u with 3x on the bottom, is going to zero. It's a singular limit. The equation approaches the so-called Burgers equation with singularity, but it approaches it with a certain scaling, and so, the time also goes to infinity. Scalings here are complicated, but it is very clear, in my opinion, from this fact, how different and non-commuting are the two limits. We made a very small proposition, almost useless proposition. Formally, if you take the so-called the Fourier truncation or Fourier-Galerkin truncation of KdV, what you get is a possible resonant normal form from Fermi-Pasta-Ulam and Toda in the lower part of the spectrum. Proposition is a proposition, but it is useless because it is not possible to deduce from it as a corollary the behavior of Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. As a matter of fact, if you accept to forget the remainder, this is the heuristic part, and you take KdV as a good normal form, you explain what you obtain in your numerical results. Again, here is your figure, which is the width of the packet in Toda, for example. This works for Toda, Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. It is the first part, long time for Toda, intermediate time for Fermi-Pasta-Ulam. Here to assume you provide a convenient definition of the width of the packet you can use by means of the so-called spectral entropy, but forget again about technicalities. Imagine there is a number, you have such a profile with an exponential decay, and you can take, I don't know, the slope of the exponential as a possible definition, or a test of uniformity of the spectrum, the definition of your choice of width of the spectrum. Here you pass from 0.1, the initial one in this figure, to something which turns out to be slightly more than 0.2, okay? And this is the Fermi-Pasta-Ulam phenomenon. This is exactly the same situation, but for the fact that you change the initial datum. It is more, the initial profile is narrower, only, I don't know, 3% or something like that. This is 10%, this is 3%. It is lower. At time 10 power 3, you did not yet arrive to the profile, but the final result is the same. Well, this process in the course of time is described by this curve. You start from 0.03, it grows in time, it arrives to a finite length. This we understand. This we understand in that heuristic way. We are able to reproduce with Antonio Ponno and Roberto Olivi three scaling laws, that is homogeneity relations of the curve before. The first one, an example, this is exactly the KdV equation, has a group of invariants inside, which is indeed respected. If you take the width as a function of time, number of degrees of freedom, energy, initial width, and you multiply with suitable exponents the variables, you obtain the final result up to lambda power 1/4. So if you scale the fundamental variables in this way, you obtain identical curves, nu versus t, up to a frame scaling with a certain power of lambda for time, a certain power for lambda in the width. And here you see the curves, the different curves at different values of n, this is n0, epsilon, time, okay? If you rescale the axis, all these curves collapse to a single one, to a single one. So I think we are capturing something. And three scaling relations means that you are able to reduce all the dependence on four variables to just one. And it turns out, this is somehow surprising, that the way the law you obtain, which is this one, depends on whether initially you put random phases on the modes you excite, or you put the phases correlated. For example, all of them are equal. Well, believe me, most of the confusion in the literature between different behavior of the model is that because some authors excite 10% of modes with random phases, other ones do it with all the energy being kinetic, all the energy being potential, that is with correlated phases, they obtain different things. And the explanation is this one. If you put random phases in the modes you excite, and this is statistical mechanics, then you obtain a good thermodynamic limit behavior, no dependence on n, n is irrelevant. Instead, for correlated phases, n is relevant and the phenomenon is completely different. It's incredible, but the technical point inside is extremely elementary. A sum of cosine, it is proportional to n if defines the phases are equal or they are in some way correlated. And otherwise, it goes with the square root of epsilon, and that makes the difference. You see an example of n 1,000 or 16,000, no difference at all, same behavior, okay? Instead, and this is the previous curve in which there are different curves exactly superimposed, different only by n. If you do the same with correlated phases, then n is very relevant. You have a loss of localization and you arrive much in a much shorter time to energy equipartition. This is not because it is important to observe the phases, but it is a test that the laws obtained heuristically from KDU equation probably are correct. So the overall picture we have in mind, and we are trying to test it, and this is almost the conclusion, is that the correspondence between linear modes, the usually normal modes of physics, and the TODA actions, the blue curve I sub zero is an abbreviation for the linear modes, is one-to-one in the mechanical limit, in the only limit mathematicians are able to keep under control. It is really one-to-one only deeply outside statistical mechanics, deeply outside, only in such an impossible, statistically impossible regime you have continuity between linear and nonlinear model. Instead, in the regime of statistical mechanics, what seems to be correct is that if you excite a single normal mode in the low part of the spectrum, in the higher part, the picture is correct, but not in the low part, because of the acoustic resonance, one mode excites many actions. How many? Always this number, n power epsilon 1/4, or if you want, the fourth root of n squared times n fourth times epsilon. So you excite a finite part of the spectrum, and even a single normal mode can produce a Fermi state. Conversely, if you excite a single action, the excitation of it corresponds to a packet of normal modes. And so the overall picture, in our opinion, is that in the case of random phases, you have just a superposition, an incoherent superpositions of this fact. For example, you excite 5%, 3%, 10% of modes. At the very end, you obtain a width of the profile, you obtain a Fermi pasta Ulam state, okay, of this width, epsilon power 1/4 times n. In mathematical language, you excite a torus of dimension, not n, but epsilon power 1/4 n. And phases run on this torus of lower dimension. Instead, if you have coherent phases, the one-to-one correspondence between modes is completely destroyed and exciting initially the same 5% corresponds to an excitation of many actions. This is the conjecture we have in mind in this moment, and we are working together with a student trying to not prove, but at least to confirm it by observing directly the actions of the TODA model. It is difficult. There is, in principle, an algorithm to compute them, but the algorithm is based on the possibility of finding the root of a polynomial of degree n, and so it's extremely difficult numerically if you're exploring large n. Turns out that the number of digits, the idea is already present in the 82 paper by Ferguson, Flaschke, and McLaughlin. They did something, and we observed that the number of digits, of decimal digits, you need to have at least a small precision is n divided by 2. Ferguson worked with 16, they don't say, but you observe they work with the usual double precision of computers, 16 decimal places, and as a fact, they did not produce results above n equals 32. This is incredible. Now we understand why. It's very difficult to work, but it is promising. A student did something preliminary in the undergraduate thesis. Well, a second line, independent of this, is investigating dimension 2. I already did several computations. It's easier in a sense because there is no underlying integrable model. The only reference is dimension 2, and you have a similar phenomenon. I haven't results here. If somebody interested, I can produce. Okay. Some work is done. It's even easier. At least numerically, it is much easier. Conclusions, which are the main messages? Well, the first is that after 60 years, in fact, even more than 50 years, and hundreds of papers, Fermi-Pasdaoulam problem is still puzzling. And the main difficulty is making the correct limit. The second one is that in dimension one, there is this strange presence of the integrable TODA model. It is very uncommon to have an integrable system in a discrete system of particles. And that there is no hope to understand Fermi-Pasdaoulam instead as a perturbation of the linear mode model. The third point is that TODA is integrable, but it is not really understood. It is understood only in the other limit, small epsilon at fixed n. I told you before that you introduce action angle variables, and changing variables is basically moving the head. But moving in the head, if n is large, you must turn and turn and turn so many times your head that you do not understand anything. This is the point. There is continuity, but a worse and worse continuity if n goes to infinity. This is the point. And this is not understood. Mathematics doesn't... I had many conversations with experts of TODA, but they do. It's very hard even to understand which is the problem. KdV could be useful. It provides a good normal form for large n, but every is heuristic and not controlled mathematically. Perhaps the picture I told you before is good. It is on the horizon, but this is future work for me and for anything of you who want to contribute. Anybody is absolutely welcome. Thanks a lot.